Ready? Okay. Okay, I think we got 12 for our jury tonight. I think so. Okay, Proverbs 14:16. Let's go ahead and pray. Spirit of God, the author of this book, I do pray that you'd help us understand it. Lord, I pray that you'd help us know how to rightly divide this book and what goes where as far as doctrine goes, and also what we can apply to ourselves. Help us to fully understand your words and what we're to do about it. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, Proverbs 14, back at chapter 10 through 29. Most of it is like one-liners or something like that, or common sayings, or real pithy type sayings. Some of them stand alone. Some of them will be associated with another verse. And so we can't, in order to do it justice, we're just going to poke on through here. Not in a big hurry. Okay, Proverbs 14:16. A wise man feareth and departeth from evil, but the fool rageth and is confident. Sounds like a judge I was just listening about there. A fool rageth and is confident. Okay, a wise man feareth. Feareth what? What's he supposed to fear? Okay, feareth and departeth from evil. Okay, fearing man, the Lord warns against that. Matthew 10:28. Fear not him who's able to kill the body, but is not able to kill the soul. Fear him who's able to destroy both body and soul in hell. Okay, and then 1 Timothy, I think it's 1:7, or 2 Timothy 1:7. We are not under the spirit of fear and of love and a sound mind. Okay, so what are we to fear? A wise man feareth. Well, it's wise to fear jumping off a bridge. That's smart. There's a right kind of a wrong kind of fear, as there are a lot of things. Jesus said, the peace I give you is not as the world giveth, give I unto you. So there's a right kind of peace, and then there's a wrong kind. And so knowing these things, we need to realize that Satan counterfeits virtually everything God has. And what he's going to try to do is to get us afraid. Proverbs 28, verse 1, it says, the righteous are bold as a lion. And so the thing to do is, when you know what's right to do, just do it. Now, you're going to be scared doing it. Fear doesn't mean that you have complete confidence. Courageous soldiers in battle are scared to death doing what they're doing. Okay, so a wise man feareth and departeth from evil. Now, what are we supposed to fear? What's the right kind of fear? Okay, we're not to fear man. We're not to fear terrorism. Okay, Matthew 24, the Lord said, be not troubled. He said, don't let it trouble you. And the Lord may have to play a dirty trick on you that he did me to settle me down about this stuff. And, you know, I've told this here maybe once or twice, confession is good for the soul. But when I started reading the Patriot stuff, you know, read about everything, black helicopters. I mean, you just read it and I've got it. You know, I've read about it. So late on a Saturday night at midnight, you know, all of a sudden we hear a helicopter buzz in our house. And as soon as I hear the helicopter, I run into the bathroom, foolishly turn on the light, and then look out the front window, and there's a sheriff's car in front of my house. And then as soon as he sees my head poking out the window, or at least my interpretation of him seeing me, off he goes. I come back in the bedroom, said to my wife, it's happening quicker than I thought. Took me about 5 minutes to find my gun. Okay, and that helicopter had a big searchlight, and it would make a big circle, and it would buzz our house. Backyard, over the house, everywhere for a good 15 minutes, and then it went away. And of course, you know, we're as nervous as a cat in a room full of rocking chairs. Go back to sleep. Get in bed. Go back to sleep after you settle down. And then 2:30, here it comes again. The same helicopter, same cop car, same everything. Here we go. And so then it leaves. And then we get back in bed. And then the next morning we get up and call the neighbor who has a scanner and said, "What was going on last night?" Well, we had three people. We got three different stories from three different scanners. One said that there was a drug fight down at the cemetery. They had a shootout. Another one said there was a hostage down there at a house. You know, this is Rentsultucky. I mean, down there in Rentsultucky, there's a hostage down there, some drug fight. Another one said there were some grave robbers at the cemetery. So we got three stories, and they were looking for two guys down our street, Buncombe Road. And then the truth came out on Thursday. An idiot, rookie cop, did not want to be transferred, was being transferred, took his own gun, shot his own car, called in to headquarters, said, "Two guys shot at me." That was the truth. The guy didn't do any time in jail. They shipped him out someplace else. And after I heard the story, the Lord just kind of said, "Why don't you just relax?" I said, "Oh, okay. That sure was a dirty trick." Okay, Brother Paul. Right. But to evil? Right. But when you go in court, you'll see the judge get mad that the ones trying to do the right thing and the ones that give in to the system, they're real nice to them. Right. 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 A lot of times, you know, when you get involved in these things, people are, you know, afraid to make your appearances. And, you know, I'm just as human as everybody else, but several years ago, I was reffing a basketball game, and halfway at the halftime, I'm sitting down. Brent and Heidi were pretty small at that time, I think nine and seven. Heidi, I think, was seven at the time. And we're sitting there and in the halftime, and Dennis Lushin sitting beside me, and I look across the gym, and there's a guy mouthing words at me, looking right at me, and they weren't the "Lord bless you" kind of words. It was "you blank, you blank, 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 blank." So I said to Dennis, I said, "Is that guy talking to me?" He looked over, he said, "He looks like he is." And so there's Heidi beside me. I said, "Hey, Heidi, go buy me a bag of popcorn, if you would." Gave her the money. I said, "You take this popcorn. See that man over there yelling or, you know, making motions with his mouth?" "Yes, Daddy." I said, "I want you to go get a bag of popcorn and give it to that man and tell him it's from me." So she runs. She, little blondie, goes over there. She gets popcorn. She hands it up to him, and he thought she was handing it to him to hand it down the thing. And she said, "That's for you." He said, "Who's it from?" "That man over there." He said, "Well, you tell him the reffing stinks." So she comes back over, sits beside me. She said, "Daddy, he said the reffing stinks." And I go, I said, "Do I smell that bad?" "No, I don't think so." So after the game, I wanted that feller to get any possible chance to talk to me. I walked right across the gym, right by that guy, and I wanted him to use his wonderful opportunity to educate me how to ref a game, and a coward didn't say one cotton-picking word. And the Lord's got his ways to fix people's wagons. That same fella, come springtime, I'm coaching baseball, and we pick the teams, and guess who gets on my team? His son, for the next 3 years, was on my team. Interestingly, his son's age varied from 12 one year to 14 to back to 13. And the league limit was 13. And so I called his mother the third year, and I figured he was 15 by then. And I asked her, "How old is your son?" She says, how many mothers don't know the age of their kids? And I said, well, he has to be 13 to be on the team. She said, oh, yeah, he's 13. He was going to be 14 about 2 weeks later, so we booted him off the team. But that's the way these people are. And you're going to find a lot of people like that. All bark and no bite. The righteous are as bold as a lion. And the thing is if we get intimidated, most of sports is intimidation. That's what a lot of sports is. People are just intimidated. And the thing is if you're right, just do right. And we ought to fear God. That's who we should fear, verse 16. A wise man feareth. Feareth what? Fears God. You ought to fear a being who can speak this world into existence. And that's who we should fear. And if God be for you, who can be against you? Well, a lot of people can be against you. But it's up to the Lord if he wants them to have a temporary victory over you or not. It's obviously temporary because in the end, everybody in that cemetery is going to agree with me as far as salvation goes. Salvation is only found in Jesus Christ. It's just too bad they're going to find out too late. Okay, now this thing about fearing God. Some people will say, well, the word fear, you're not to be afraid of God. You're supposed to have reverence. Okay, Hebrews 12, verse 28. God doesn't want you to be scared of him. He wants you to revere him. Well, let me tell you, God wants you to be scared of him. Now, we serve God just as a good parent has a fine line between love and fear. And there is a very fine line in that. You want your children to obey you because they fear you, but yet because they love you. Now, generally speaking, the younger ones will obey you because of fear more so. And then as they grow older, you want them to obey because of their love. And there's a fine line. Now, this thing about having reverence toward God. Yeah, we're to have that, but we're to fear God. Hebrews 12:28 shows that there is a difference between those two words. Wherefore, we, receiving a kingdom which cannot be moved, let us have grace, whereby we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear. Notice two separate words there. Got to have two separate meanings. Okay, try Psalms 119, verse 121. This is probably the best definition for the word fear. And this is how we are to be towards God. And actually, we are to be this way towards this book right here. When you read something in this Bible and you find out your life don't match up, it ought to scare you. Psalms 119, verse 120. My flesh trembleth for fear of thee, and I am afraid of thy judgments. And I can't get any more clear than that. Afraid of God's judgments. And when God brings the axe down, boy, does he bring it down. Okay, so we are to fear God. Look, if you would, in Isaiah 66, verse 2. Here's where we are to fear the word of God. This is where you become the apple of God's eye. If you want God to put his eyes upon you and to focus on your life, to be under God's blessing. Isaiah 66, verse 2, it says, and all those things hath mine hand made, and all those things have been, saith the Lord, but to this man will I look. Isaiah 66, 2, but to this man will I look. Even to him that is poor and of a contrite spirit and trembleth at my word. He repeats that trembling, verse 5. Hear the word of the Lord, ye that tremble at his word. Okay, and the man that demonstrates that best in the Bible is Ezra chapter 9. So if you want to try that one, this is how we tremble at the word of God. Ezra chapter 9, 66. Did I say 62? I'm sorry. Okay, 66 verse 2. Okay, Ezra 9, verse 4. Now, this is Ezra demonstrating how he trembles at the word. Ezra 9, verse 3 and 4. He says, "When I heard this thing, I rent my garment and my mantle." That's where we have a common saying. He's all tore up about this. "And plucked off the hair of my head and of my beard and sat down astonied. Then were assembled unto me everyone that trembleth at the words of the God of Israel because of the transgression of those that had been carried away, and I sat astonied until the evening sacrifice." And then verse 5 and following is a great confession prayer. Not that you find any telephone booth in Saturday night in any bingo parlor. That's the great prayer of true confession. Okay, so Ezra, now Ezra's got a strange thing. He has a national revival where they all agree, Ezra 9 and 10, and this revival starts with serving divorce papers. Different sort of revival. But that's how that thing worked on Ezra 9 and 10. Okay, back in Proverbs 14. Okay, the wise man feareth. He feareth God. Okay, when we fear God, we depart from evil because we know God can punish evil. But the fool rageth and is confident. He that is soon angry dealeth foolishly. And a man of wicked devices is hated. Well, living in our day and age, a lot of times the man of wicked devices get your vote. You know, but the idea of dealing, being angry quickly, verse 17, and then there's another one, verse 29, they kind of go together. He that is slow to wrath is of great understanding, but he that is hasty of spirit exalteth folly. So the common saying is haste makes waste. Okay, probably what's will help somebody to not be angry quickly is verse 29, where a man is of great understanding. And the thing is people react too quick. They don't hear all the evidence. They don't hear the whole story. And they react too quick, and then they put their foot in their mouth, and now they got a backpedal. And now their pride's in the way. And now they can't hear the whole picture. They can't see the whole picture because they made a fool out of themselves. Now, probably this is one thing I've observed with Gene Zimmerman more than anything, is because of his understanding of the law, he's very relaxed in it. And he doesn't react quickly. Now, I've seen his dander get up a couple times, but boy, it took a lot to get it going. Now, usually if somebody's slow to anger, once the anger does come, watch out. Now, it's not a sin to be angry on the right thing. Ephesians 4:26, be ye angry. That's a command. Be ye angry and sin not. Let not the sun go down upon your wrath. There's a right kind of anger. Okay, and a lot of times what young people, like the army or the military, is often made up of young people because their anger gets up riled real quick. Their minds are very impressionable. And their anger will get up and they'll fight at the drop of a hat. And often a young man will fight scripturally at the drop of a hat, argue immediately, wants to get a kill rather than a convert. And when he sees an older person who's using more wisdom, he thinks it's compromise. When the older man has been around long enough that he realizes you don't have to win every battle to win the war. And the thing is, you got to pick your fights. And when you're dealing with people about the scriptures, there's nothing wrong with giving in to something that they believe, even though it's wrong, just to try to show the winning of the argument or the winning of the truth. You know, I can sit down with a Catholic and eat fish with him on Friday, not to offend him, and then try to bring him to the gospel, even though we know he's wrong on that. Now I'm not going to sit down there and tweedle his beads with him and try to win him. You know? But there's a balance. Paul said, to a Jew, I'm a Jew, that I might gain some. So you're finding common ground with somebody. Common ground that you can be with them so you could show them the truth. Now, again, there's a balance in this thing. I'm not saying I'm going to drink a beer with a guy to win him to Christ. You know, if a guy, I've had, you know, guys in a softball field, guy a year and a half ago, yeah, he was just trying to be funny, goofing around, offering me a beer, and I just looked at him and I said, do I look like a fool? He said, no. He didn't want to answer that question again. Okay, but he was just trying to be goofy, and I just wanted to let him know I wasn't going to take it. And as far as these things go, okay, verse 17, that as soon as angry, deal foolishly. Often when the anger occurs, the brain stops. The brain stops and the mouth starts. And you know how an argument goes. If you want to discover in the Bible an argument taking place, there's a couple places you can look. One is you observe Jacob and Laban when they got arguing there. A bunch of half-truths, innuendos all through there. And then study real close what Job's three friends said to him. Because that was a hot argument between Job's three friends and Job. They were accusing him of being the Antichrist. When you look at what they're saying. And then Elihu comes along and he says, well, I don't accuse you of being the Antichrist, but I do accuse you of being his workers. And I tell you, if I was Job, and if any of us was Job, and if you lost 10 children, and then somebody comes along and says, well, your kids died because they had it coming to them, that's about the time you'd like to whip out your, you know, 9mm or 10mm and, you know, put an extra hole in somebody's head. If you lost 10 children. But that's what the guys were saying to him. That's what Eliphaz was saying to him. Your children died because they're wicked. And I'd say, and you're going to die because you're stupid. Boom. If you can imagine somebody losing 10 children like that. And Job did not curse God with his lips, it says. It's an amazing thing, and that's why he was a man of great understanding. A lot of times people get mad at God. Now, Christians don't want to admit it, but they get mad at God all the time. Okay, now, do you recall when you were a little child, did you ever get mad at your parents? Okay, and when you got teenage years, you ever get mad at your parents? Of course. Okay, then we get mad at God. Now, if you want to see somebody that's mad at God, read Jonah chapter 4. He was mad at God. He was mad because God saved all those people in Nineveh. He wanted God to torch them. He wanted God to destroy them. And then he got that shade, the gourd, and then God killed that. And he said, and then he's mad at God about that. But the thing about that is that God was patient with Jonah because he was honest. And if you're just honest with God, which you might as well be, he sees your heart anyway. And just lay all 52 cards face up, tell him what you think about it, and then just give it over to him. But people don't want to admit it that they're mad at God. We all get mad at God. God, if you knew what I knew... Would you rephrase that, please? Okay, and that's what we do. Okay, so he that is soon angry dealeth foolishly. 18, the simple inherit folly, but the prudent are crowned with knowledge. Now, we kind of went through this one already when we hit 15. 15 and 18, they go together. The simple believeth every word, but the prudent man looketh well to his going. That's why I say time and time again, don't believe a thing I say unless you can see it in the Bible for yourself. And if you agree with me 100%, you're probably not thinking. Because there's going to be some sort of a disagreement along the way. We're just all human. We see things differently. Okay, so the simple inherit folly, but the prudent are crowned with knowledge. Now that crown could be a crown passed out of the judgment seat. That's why I have that cross reference on the word crown. The little letter T runs you to Proverbs 4 and 1 Peter 5, and that's dealing with the crown of glory. Okay, 19. The evil bow before the good. Is that true today? See, that's where you got to learn to rightly divide this book. The evil, you know, the meek inherit the earth. Har, har, har. Not today. But the time period that verse is aimed at, yes, that's true. The millennium, the meek will inherit the earth. But today, who inherits the earth is the guy with the biggest gun. So here we have a verse. You got to, you know, people don't want to think about these verses. Now, this is the best way you're going to learn your Bible, when you go verse by verse. And you're going to find so few preachers that will go verse by verse the way we do, is because I know why they don't do it. Because they, if they come across a verse like this, they just want to gloss over it and avoid it. And if they don't go verse by verse, then they can avoid it all they want. Let's just pick this favorite. Oh, I like this one. You know, I like this. The one that's going to promote my ministry. That's the ones I want to use. Okay, because there's a, you know, there's a buck in it. Okay, so when you go verse by verse, I know it takes longer. There's a woman down there in Monon that actually told somebody, this person was looking for a church to go to, and she said, well, if you want to learn the Bible, this woman said, if you really want to learn the Bible, you go up to that one in Rensselaer, that Bible Baptist church, and you'll learn a book. Now, does that woman come? No. She don't come. She's too busy inviting her charismatic pastor over with her other friend, and her other friend barfs up Satan about on Tuesdays. That's what they were doing at that time. And they were literally doing that, barfing up something, and she said, oh, I got rid of the, you know, some spirit. Some stupid charismatics. You know? And that's what this woman, you know, that's what this woman said. Now, is she going to come to the church? Don't count on it. We had another case that's really funny like that, where this lady came to church on a Wednesday night, and I happened to be at that time teaching Proverbs down in Rensselaer, and I was going, and I hit this one, Proverbs 16:33. The lot is cast into the lap, but the whole disposing thereof is of the Lord. And I got talking about gambling, you know, and casting lots, you know, drawing straws, flipping coins. You know, there's, you know, I do that sometimes. You know, if I don't, if there's two right ways to go, I don't know which way to go, flip the coin and go that route. Okay, and so this wife went home with her husband, and they put three church names in a hat. And they're going to ask God to tell them which church they're going to go to. Now, obviously, the other two churches they were going to go to were not scriptural. This, you know, I wouldn't have, you know, approved of this because of the other two. But here's what they did. They had three church names in the hat. They drew the first name out, and it was our church. And they didn't like that, so they put it back in, you know, searching around. Did it a second time, and up came our church a second time, two for two, put it back in, searching around. Three for three, back in, sure. Four for four, back in, sure. Five for five. Can you imagine the chance of that taking place? Five for five. Then her mother comes into the room. She says, hey, Ma, come over here. Take something out of the hat. Six out of six, our church came up. Guess which church they didn't go to? Now, how we know this is she told my wife this at a grocery store. And that's where they didn't go to church. If you want to see a messed up family, just go talk to them people. I mean, here they, you know, if you're going to ask God to do something, flip a coin, you're going to have to stipulate before you do two out of three, three out of four, you know, or something like that. Take what it says. And the Lord's in control of those things. That's why I don't gamble. Boy, I'm chicken. I know what the Lord would do. He'd take it. You know, all that stuff. Okay, but as far as this goes, evil bow before the good. Doctrinally, the evil is going to bow before Jesus Christ someday in the millennium. And then he says, and the wicked at the gates of the righteous. Now, there's how you know the doctrine is coming up here, because Proverbs, remember, when we went through Proverbs, doctrinally, it's aimed at the tribulation. The evil bow before the good. I have the letter U there, and that runs you to Psalms 110. And that's about the enemies that are going to lick the dust when Jesus Christ is the king. And oh, is that going to be so fun to watch? Boy, I mean, it's going to be so fun to watch there, and the Lord will make a command, a rule, and you'll see people in front of him just stewing, and you can see it all over their face. They're mad about it, and he's just going to rub it right in their face. Going to make them bite the dust. And he's going to, you know, I can't imagine the human pride like that. I can't imagine it. But that's what they're going to do. Psalms 110, this is when Jesus Christ is the king. And he's going to rule by an absolute dictatorship. He's going to rule by a rod. Psalms 110, verse 1. The Lord said unto my Lord, sit thou at my right hand until I make thine enemies thy footstool. The Lord shall send the rod of thy strength out of Zion. Rule thou in the midst of thy enemies. Now, how you know they're going to have enemies at that day? Because at the end of the thousand-year reign of Christ, Satan's going to be let loose out of hell, according to Revelation 20, and he's going to gather an army as the sand of the sea and fight Jesus Christ. After they watched a sinless king for 1,000 years, you talk about the pride of man. Arrogant. Okay, so the evil bow before the good Jesus Christ. There's none good but one, that is God. And the wicked at the gates of the righteous. Okay, in the Bible, in the gate, at the gates, is a designation of the politics or the courtroom settings in the gate. When it says Lot sat in the gate, it says that Boaz went down to the gate, and that's where he married Ruth. So that's like a public forum there in the gate, so all the business was conducted openly, the way it's supposed to be. Okay, and that's where that designation is talking about the gates. Okay, verse 20, the poor is hated even of his own neighbor, but the rich hath many friends. Pretty self-explanatory. The rich, I've said this to a lot of guys in jail, they talk about their drinking buddies. And I said, oh, your drinking buddies. I said, did they come visit you while he's been in jail? And they dropped their heads. No. I said, boy, not very good friends you got. I think your best friend just walked in and is talking to you. Because I'm willing to come in and talk to you and try to help you out when you're down. Okay, so the rich people, they don't know who their friends are. It's a very sad thing. That's why they don't trust anybody. Sad thing, you don't know who your friends are. Verse 21, he that despiseth his neighbor sinneth. Okay, the idea of the word neighbor, this neighbor would, it's implying that this is a poor neighbor because of the second half of the verse. But he that hath mercy on the poor, happy is he. Okay, so 20 and 21 sort of go together. But like the attorney, the lawyer that asked Jesus, who was tempting him in Luke 10, who is my neighbor? And that's when the story came up about the Good Samaritan. Okay, this idea of the poor, pure religion is undefiled before God and the Father is this, to visit the fatherless and the widows. Okay, that's pure religion according to James 1:27, to visit the fatherless and widows and to keep himself unspotted from the world. Now, this idea of helping out poor folks. Proverbs 29, verse 7 says, the righteous considereth the cause of the poor. Why are they poor? Is it laziness? Okay, then do the best thing you can do for them is don't help them out. You know, welfare is neither well nor fair. And the Bible welfare program was the poor had to do something to get the food or the money. course, today, you know, $7 that go into the welfare program, only one get to the actual recipient. Somebody keeps taking out of the till as they go through. And you always have to be cautious of somebody who gets a six-figure income who says he's concerned about the poor. Because Judas was the one holding a bag. He was concerned for the poor. Remember when Mary anointed Jesus and Judas was the one that instigated the griping against her? Oh, we could have sold that and gave to the poor. About like a Jesse Jackson or something. Okay, and so the idea of poverty, somebody who's legitimately poor, when you help them out, you are making a loan to God. Psalms, I think it's 111 that says that. You're actually giving a loan to God when you're helping out somebody who is legitimately poor. And that act lives forever. Psalms 112 verse 9. Now, this is a verse that's repeated or it's quoted in 2 Corinthians chapter 9. So it's safe ground for us. Psalms 112 verse 9. He hath dispersed, he hath given to the poor. His righteousness endureth forever. That act of giving to somebody who's legitimately poor is enduring forever. His horn shall be exalted with honor. His horn, the idea of the horn is a symbolism of power or authority or somebody in a position of authority. And that's why the secret societies will usually portray an animal, okay, for their power. You know, the moose, lodge, the elk. You know, what did Fred Flintstone have? The water buffaloes or whatever? Okay, the horn, the idea of the horn. Okay, we say he's a ten-horn dictator. Those horns you'll find in Revelation chapter 12, associated with the devil. Okay, so if you find somebody legitimately poor, you are helping out Jesus Christ. Now, this is something that's so important with God. He has set up an entire judgment situation on this idea alone. During the tribulation, obviously, poverty will be worldwide. The middle class will be totally obliterated. So you have extreme rich, extreme poor. That's communism. Okay, and so the poor, the Jews running around or people running around during the tribulation, if they're helped out like people did during World War II to help out somebody or Jews like Corrie Ten Boom, what they did, okay, when they legitimately tried to help somebody out, somebody poor running for their life, Matthew 25 shows a judgment that the Lord will judge every person on earth upon their behavior of the poor folks, the poor righteous during the tribulation. And if they help them out, then they are the ones that go into the millennium and start populating the millennium. They get to live through the millennium. The ones who took advantage of the poor, like the Arabs would do, where they envy the Jews, they go right to hell. You know, they do not go past go. They do not collect $200. They go right to hell. And then he judged them again at the white throne judgment. Now, we're living in a day and age where there is constant scams going on. I wouldn't give a dime to any TV program, not one of these Christian radio programs or Christian television programs that are trying to collect money for a bunch of poor folks, and they put a bunch, you know, somebody up there, and you don't know who what they're doing. You know, I wouldn't give them a dime. God does things usually on an individual basis. Now, if you can find somebody legitimately, then you help them out. For example, you know, Brent and I went to Vietnam. We saw exactly what Mike Roberts is doing with the orphans over there. We see exactly what he's doing with them. You can support a little orphanage boy or girl in Vietnam for $25 a month. I think it was $25 a month. Build them a house for $1,000. And that house is better than most anybody's in that little community. We saw several of them. Okay, and that's something where it's under control, where it's being legitimately used. When you're dealing with the big boys, a lot of the TV guys, or if you get Christian magazines, they show some little African kid, maybe his stomach puffed out. You don't know where that money's going. You're not a clue. You don't know. And so be very cautious about those things. Now, a lot of times what these mission trips do is they'll go and help put some clothes in somebody's back, put some food in their belly, but they don't tell them about Jesus Christ. What good is that? It'd be better if the little child died before age of accountability than to put food on his belly and then get up to past the age of accountability and not hear anything about Jesus Christ. So the idea is to put them both together. The Salvation Army used to be salvation. That's how it began. Today it's nothing but clothes and junk. Okay, as far as this thing, okay, Proverbs 6:14. It's having just being balanced about these things. You know, we get phone calls all the time asking for money. Does your church help people out? Sometimes I say, why don't you call St. A's? They got more money. And you feel hard about these things, but I tell you, there are professional mooches out there. And once you start giving in to some of these professional mooches, your name will be coming up all the time. They'll spread the word. Do you help people out with their electric bill? Time and time I've heard that. And so basically my rule of thumb is we help only people that we know personally. And that's about the only way you're going to stop that. Okay, Proverbs 14, verse 22. Do they not err that devise evil, but mercy and truth shall be to them that devise good? Self-explanatory. In all labor there is profit. Except when a government takes all your taxes out of it. In all labor there is profit, but the talk of lips tendeth only to penury. Talk is cheap. Okay, the idea of the talk of the lips is just plain old foolish talk, you know, just no good talk. Most of them like the sitcoms, a lot of talk radio. You just talk, 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 yak, 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 yak. Most political speeches is nothing but yak, 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 talk, talk, talk. And it tends to penury, poverty. Okay, and so good, true preaching and teaching the Word of God is very beneficial. And if somebody's talking and you're sitting in there and you're not getting a cotton-picking thing out of the guy and you can see he's going to do this for a solid hour, walk out. Usually I go places I have something to read. You know, if I go to conferences, I'll bring something to read because half the time I don't want to hear what's being said. Jeremy's going to walk out. You only sat in here a minute. Okay. Okay, so there's a balance here. Now, John Wesley thought it was a sin to talk with somebody more than 15 minutes. So he talked to him 15 minutes to leave. That saved a lot of phone bills. Unless you get unlimited long distance, that's what we went to. Okay, and, I'm not saying yeah or nay on John Wesley, but when you do talk to somebody, make sure, it's a give-and-take situation. I had a guy that he was a good friend to me, but I wasn't one to him, and I really didn't really care to be one to him, but he knew what it was to be a friend. And he'd call me, and he would talk, 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 talk. And I'd set the phone down and walk away for 5 minutes, come back. He didn't even know I'd left. And it was a bunch of nothing. Talking about myself, and this is what I do, and what I do. I got more important things to do. And realize that when you're talking to somebody, you're taking the most precious commodity that they have. Time. And, we're stuck in this paper sack called time. And we need to be very considerate of people's time. Make it worth their time. And you know, I'm one on that to where I obviously am almost always accused. I give too much. I go too fast. I can't keep up. Well, I'd rather give too much than not enough. Okay, that's 23. Did tape kick off? Not yet. Okay, 24. The crown of the wise. There's the tape. See, I just heard it. Okay, 24. We'll stop there at 23. Any questions or comments when we cover? Okie dokie. How about some prayer requests?